Hashem, we're able to conquer and recapture Yerushalayim. So it sounds unusual that today Rabbi Friedman is going to address us and speak about 1947 to 1967, where Yerushalayim was not in our hands. 1948, we lost control till 1967. So why would we spend the time this week, which is supposed to be a celebratory week, in which it's one large party remembering the times in which we didn't have control? So the Gemara tells us, whoever mourns over Jerusalem, will merit to see the joy. And there are many different explanations for this particular Gemara, but on a simple understanding is that one could only appreciate what they have if they understood when they didn't have it. To fully comprehend the joy that we're going to have this Wednesday when we say Hallel. When we stop and pause and reflect about, think about all the miraculous things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for us, first we have to appreciate what was there before and how desolate it was in order for us to fully appreciate the Simcha that is going to be this Wednesday. Before I introduce Rabbi Friedman, I'm going to just say a couple of things that are obvious to everybody in this room. But sometimes, as the Basilis Yesharim says, we need a little kiss. If your phone is not in your pocket at this particular juncture, it should be. If it's in front of you, it's not acceptable. Rabbi Friedman has spent a lot of time preparing this lecture for you so that you could fully appreciate what it means, the gift of Yerushalayim. Nobody, of course, should put their heads down. And of course, everybody should give the utmost kavod to Rabbi Friedman. We thank Rabbi Friedman for putting this together for us. Without further ado,
guys, let me begin by saying that I'm the oldest guy in the room. And 1967, for most of you guys, is ancient history. For me, it's memory. 1967, I was a junior high school student at Trapp Hagen Junior High School in Mount Vernon, New York. I didn't go to yeshiva until high school. And I had vivid, vivid memories of the literal the fear that the Jewish community felt that Israel was going to be annihilated. And it really was feeling was going to be annihilated. I remember that my social studies teacher, Mr. Anthony Soldano, not Michelano, when the war broke out on June the 5th, hung up a big map of the Middle East. And each day it was mapping where the Israeli forces were, where the Arab forces were. And the Jewish kids were jumping out of their skin. So as I said, 1967 for me is a memory, whereas I'm sensitive to the fact for you guys, even for most of my colleagues, it's ancient history. Rabbi Storch began with a very, very important point. You know, Rabbi Binyamin Kamenevsky passed away recently. And sometimes when we're busy here in yeshiva during the day, I have a habit of being an observer by nature. I like to watch things. I'm not always in them, I watch them. You know, guys, you got it real good. Lots of yeshiva high schools around here. Plenty of kosher food. I watch the delivery trucks pull up lunchtime. Mike's Burgers. Carlos Igabes. Right? Because the food they serve in yeshiva is not good enough. You need that better. Multiple minyanim available in multiple shuls of the neighborhood. Guys, you got it real good. The patira, the death of Rabbi Binyamin Kamenetsky, gives us an opportunity, which frankly most of us are not going to use, I'm quite aware of that, but gives us the opportunity to think back what things were like 60 years ago in this neck of the woods. It wasn't easy. The Five Towns was a midbar 60 years ago. And it's worth reading a little bit of the biography of Rabbi Binyamin Kamenetsky, Zechar Tzadik Livracha, to appreciate, which you don't. And frankly, I don't fully either, to appreciate the effort, the sacrifice that it took him and a few others around him to create the ease and the comfort and the easy orthodoxy that we live with here today in this neighborhood. Same thing goes for Israel, boys. How many guys in this room have been to Israel on a trip? Fine, I figured so. So much of what I'm going to talk about are things familiar to you. Get on the plane for that unending 10-hour flight, or longer if you have a stopover someplace. You get off at a modern, sleek, beautiful airport. You take a bonit, you take a shirut, and maybe you rent a car, and you drive up Kfish Echad to Yerushalayim, where it's the destination of most of us. Then you go to the Inbal, or to the Leonardo, or to the Dan Panorama. It's great. And from the Hoycha Fenster, you even own an apartment in Yerushalayim. Enjoy the city, you walk around, and you wend your way through the old city to the Kosel Maravi. And the only thing you're concerned about is which restaurant I'm going to eat lunch or dinner in, whether the falafel stand that I ate at was any good or lousy, and whether my cell phone service is operating properly or not. Those are the great headaches of modern Orthodox yeshiva high school kids going to Israel. Baruch Hashem, guys, those are your headaches. Because it didn't come to us on what's called in Hebrew a magash shel kesef. It didn't come to us on a silver platter. Let me tell you something about that airport. In 1947, 1948, when the state of Israel emerged, Ramla and Lod, the towns around there, were big Arab towns. Easy to take pot shots into the airport. And when you take that Kfish Echad, when you take that road to Yerushalayim, and the Shvela, the valley, the flatlands, and you go up into the mountains, Rabosai, in 1947, 1948, that was a, what's the term I wrote over here? It was a death trap. It was a death trap. Because you guys know when you take that road, there were hills to your left and hills to your right. They were swarming with Arabs, armed Arabs. I think the rednecks in America call it a turkey shoot. Well, a turkey shoot. It was a turkey shoot against the Jewish convoys trying to supply Yerushalayim. The old city, getting to the old city, getting to the Kosel Maravi. Well, we'll see some pictures. You guys will hopefully next trip appreciate the enormity of what we're celebrating this coming Wednesday. Guys, think of the map. November the 29th, 1947, the United Nations divided British Palestine into two areas. The green was going to be the border. Some might tell me I'm familiar with this. The green was going to be the state of Israel. And the brown was going to be the Arab state of Palestine. The Jews said yes, and the Arabs waged war. But I want you to take a minute to look over the map. You want to talk about indefensible borders? You want to talk about the inability of Jews to be able to defend themselves and live in a safe, contiguous piece of property? That was going to be the map of the State of Israel that the United Nations voted on November the 29th, 1947. By the way, you'll notice, Yerushalayim in its entirety was not going to be a part of the new State of Israel. The entire Jewish population of Palestine in 1947 was 600,000. 70 years later, it's now over 8 million. 100,000 of the 600,000 Jews living in Palestine lived in Yerushalayim, would not have been a part of a Jewish state. Yerushalayim was going to be an international city run by the United Nations. That was the vote. Now, for those who'd like to know why the United States Embassy is not located in Yerushalayim, why it's located in Tel Aviv, that's the reason why. Because the United States in 1947, guys, voted for this map. This was the map of Israel that the United States voted on. And to this day, the United States, whether they talk back and forth, it may be yes, it may be no, bottom line, Tel Aviv is where the United States has parked its embassy, because Yerushalayim was voted on almost 70 years ago to be an international city, and the United States has not officially changed its stance in that way. Well, fact you guys should be kind of aware of. May the 14th, Friday, 1948. The picture on the board speaks for itself. You guys may be familiar with a newspaper called the Jerusalem Post. Well, the granddaddy of the Jerusalem Post was then called the Palestine Post. Because before 1948, gentlemen, the 600,000 Jews living there were Palestinians. We were also Palestinians. Then we morphed into Israelis. The morning of May the 15th, 1948, I'm sorry, the map isn't as clear as it might be, not bad. This was the happy birthday present given by the Arab world to the brand new Jewish state. An invasion from the north, invasion from the south, invasion from the east. No invasion from the west, that's the Mediterranean Sea. And the goal of the Arab invasion, five armies, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Iraq, and Egypt, was to take that map and basically make the green part disappear. 600,000 Jews against hundreds of thousands of Arab armies. An extraordinary poor set of circumstances. This was a daily scene. Jewish convoys around the country, ambushed, and Jews slaughtered. Fighting on the hills, those are Jews. Let me tell you something about the Jewish army, by the way. How old are you guys? 15, 16, 17? That was the age of most of the soldiers, or a good chunk of them at least, in that 1947-1948 war. It's interesting. Israel's costliest war was its first. The one least spoken about, the one least recognized, but the Tzva Haganah Yisrael that we're all so proud of, was the offshoot of a home army called the Haganah, Jewish Defense Army, made up primarily, guys, of guys your age, who didn't worry about kamosigabes, who weren't concerned about their cell phone reception, or the color of the brand on their sneakers. They were literally fighting for their lives. Let me make a suggestion to all of you, guys who are my Jewish sister, because I've heard the suggestion. Next trip to Israel, there's a little town outside Jerusalem called Kiryat Yarim. I believe that Rabbi Gordon's Yeshiva Yishrei Lev is located in Kiryat Yarim. Rabbi Storch, am I correct? I believe so. Kiryat Yarim is also known by its Arab name Abu Ghosh. There's a 1947-1948 military cemetery there for the guys who died in that war. I was taken there in 1969, my first trip to Israel as a teenager. And obviously it left a very strong impression, guys. I still remember walking amongst the graves. The soldiers who failed to create the state of Israel, like those pictures in 1947-48, the ages on the gravestones were age 15, age 16, age 17, age 18. It's left an indelible impression. Just hear it. Just hear it and think about it. Because the Jewish army was of an unborn state, so prior to Israel's independence, there was no means of importing arms. It was an army embargo. Jews smuggled arms. Jews manufactured arms as best they could in secret under the nose of the British, who didn't permit any of that stuff. And sometimes they faked it. What you're looking at here, gentlemen, which is in Svat, and here in Yerushalayim, is something called a Davidka. The Davidka was an extraordinarily loud, noisy, explosive cannon that shot nothing. But it made a heck of a lot of noise. And the hope was to scare the heck out of the Arabs with noisemakers. Because in some instances, that's all the young Jewish teenagers and 20-somethings had in their hand to be able to fight. Weapons were minimal, so they made noisemakers. That's the Davidka Square in downtown Yerushalayim. And this again, this is the Davidka up in Svat. Both of these noisemakers helped to win a war. These are Jewish convoys on the way to Yerushalayim trying to break through an Arab siege. But the Altman in a minute. You guys know that David HaMelech writes in Tehillim, Yerushalayim Harim Savivla. Yerushalayim is surrounded by hills, surrounded by mountains. It is. Unfortunately for us, in 1947-1948, those mountains were great emplacements for Arab artillery. In what today is called Givat Zev, or Nabi Samuel, or Nabi Shmuel, there were artillery emplacements. Haratzofim, Harazesim, artillery emplacements. What today is called Gilo, to the south of town between Yerushalayim and Beit Lechem, artillery emplacements. The city was under siege by superior Arab arms. We'll see pictures in a moment what daily life looked like in Yerushalayim in 1947-1948. The Israeli Air Force, 1948. No further comments necessary. A tad different, guys, than what you guys are used to seeing on video clips and the like. That was Israel's Air Force in 1948. Late model World War II Messerschmitts imported from Czechoslovakia. But there were victories. And in fact, at the end of the 1948-1949 war that lasted for a year and a half, the state of Israel had a far better border situation than the partition map that I showed you a little while earlier. Far better. As I said, it came at a cost. Of the 600,000 Jews that fought this war, 6,000 lost their lives in the 1948 war. Israel's bloodiest and costliest war. 1% of the population killed to create the state of Israel. The daily life in Yerushalayim in 1947-1948, guys, was Gehenem al Galgalim, hell on wheels. The bombings. Water had to be rationed. Running water in many places was cut off, and trucks came around street by street to deliver water. And you took your life into your hands, waiting on those lines in order to get water for your family. Because I said, the city is ringed by mountains, and the Jordanian artillery took the high spots. and shelled the city constantly for about 3 or 4 weeks. Occasionally convoys got through, but few, far, and in between. For those who think that Haredim can't hold a gun, think again. Me'asharim, Bukharim, Ula, Beis Yisrael, those who know those neighborhoods, these are the defenders against the Jordanians of those Orthodox neighborhoods which still exist today. It's a good shot for people to see. Good pro-Orthodox propaganda. Now, guys, a little compare and contrast. Here's a picture of Yerushalayim, 1946-1947. That's a Jewish quarter. Notice in the background, hills are bare to the east. To the right, you have the Churva Synagogue, with which many of you are familiar. To the left, you have what's known as the Tiferes Yisrael Synagogue or the Nissan Beck Synagogue. These are the two glory shuls of the old city of the Rova prior to the 1947-1948 war. Another view of the Nissan Beck Synagogue, probably the largest shul along with the Churva at that particular time in the old city, the Jewish Rova. Destroyed by the Arabs in 1947-48, gentlemen, they never rebuilt the Nissan Beck Tiferes Yisrael Synagogue. But if someone gives you a tour of the old city, they might have poured some cement on to keep it stable. The remains of that shul can be seen today on any tour you take of the old city. Now, guys, on the ceasefire that eventually ensued in 1949, the Jews were supposed to be given access to the old city. The old city fell in battle to the Arabs. It was controlled by the Jordanians for those 20 years. Jews were officially given permission to visit the Kolsel Maravi, but took your life in your hands, get your head blown off, because nobody did. Let's get a few shots of what the Jordanians did to the Jewish synagogues and to the Rova Hayehudi, to the Jewish quarter, during that 20-year period from ceasefire in 1949 until the 67 conquest and war that we're celebrating this coming Wednesday. This is the remains of the Churva Synagogue after being dynamited in 1948 by the Jordanian army. Another view with a Jordanian soldier of the Churva Synagogue in 1948 after it's being destroyed by the Jordanians. A little compare and contrast. About 5 years ago, the Churva Synagogue was rebuilt in the original style by the Israeli government after being under Jewish control for a number of decades after the 67 victory. And the inside, as you can see, was rebuilt in the old style. It's not a very large, it was a very high ceiling shul. It gives that sense of space. Incorporating remains of the old shul into the new. Jews and Arab fought for control of the old city. About 1,200 Jewish inhabitants of the old city at that particular time. And for those familiar, this is the Porat Yosef Shul, and where Yeshivat HaKotel is located during the battles of 1947-1948. This is Yerushalayim, this is the Rova under siege. And this is it rebuilt. 1947-1948 battle. And over the last decades, same spot, same location. It has been rebuilt, Parat Yosef, and Yeshivat HaKotel. During the 20 years, guys, that the Jordanians ruled the East Jerusalem and Har HaZesim, the cemetery, the Beis HaKvoros, and Har HaZesim was terribly desecrated and abused and in places destroyed by the Jordanians. Headstones were cracked. Headstones were knocked over. Headstones were destroyed. They used headstones, guys, to build latrines and to build places to store the animals. This is, what should we call it? Respect for Jewish holy sites. Another view of Har HaZeisim and the remains of the desecrated synagogue. The thousands of headstones that were toppled and destroyed. Eventually the Jews capitulated, and there were terms of peace demanded that all Jews leave the Rova. Pictures here of the Jewish community, the 1,200 people living in the Jewish quarter, leaving Yerushalayim in 1948, following, as I said, the fall of the city and the capitulation to the Jordanian army, to the Arab Legion. Jews leaving the Rova. This is to Har Zion. This is to the Shar Zion. Another view of Jordanian officers supervising Jews gathering up their things and leaving the city. Forced exile, forced goes into the western part of town that remained under Jewish control. Famous shot from Life magazine. Supposedly, I hear, we saw a film in the class, a 100-year-old gentleman who had spent the last 90 years of his life never having left the old city, but leaving now. Another iconic picture taken by Life magazine, the young Jewish boy getting his stuff together in order to live under Jordanian supervision. Again, the Jordanians dynamited, after the Jews left, just about every Jewish home, every Jewish institution, every Jewish synagogue. But in a certain sense, guys, they did us a big favor. I'll tell you why. Because in 1967, when the Israeli army took over the area and the Rova was cleared in order to start rebuilding some of the beautiful pictures and places you guys have all been to, it is amazing the archaeological finds that Israeli contractors came upon as they were clearing the debris. Those who know about the Broad Wall, which you visit when you take a tour of the old city, built by Hizkiyahu HaMelech, about the burnt house, and those who've been to the Cardo, all of that was only discovered because everything else was dynamited and in clearing debris in order to rebuild. These archaeological treasures were unearthed and now very much part of the heritage of visiting the old city. But take a good look at our Arab peace partners, gentlemen. Now, as far as getting to the coastal Moravi, the original deal was, as I said, in 1949, when the armistice agreements, the ceasefire agreements were established, Jews were to have access to the coastal Moravi, but of course, that actually never materialized. The closest you could get to the old city, for those who know what I'm speaking about, was Har Zion. Har Zion remained under Jewish control. The old city walls and the old city were under Jordanian control. And my parents, who visited Israel in 1963, tell me a very interesting story. They went to Har Zion. My father took a pair of binoculars to try to look over the old city walls. What could he see? And lo and behold, looking at him, staring through the other end, were three Jordanian soldiers with their rifles in position, facing him off. That was Jewish access to the holy sites, as promised by the Jordanians, as promised by the Arabs. ...1946-47, gentlemen, this is what the coastal Moravi looked like. And specifically, I want you to look at the plaza where people had space to daven. Not quite what you and I are familiar with when you go to daven today. The Arabs specifically, over the centuries, had built up hovels and homes in order to limit Jewish access to a bare bones minimum. Better shot of the same area before 1948. All of you guys are familiar with that view, what it looked like then, and what it looks like now. What it looked like then, what it looks like now. Amazing compare and contrast. worth remembering what we are, celebrating. As I told you guys, Jerusalem was a divided city. And the way that you had access, the way that people had access from East Jerusalem under Jordanian control, the old city and the Arab neighborhoods to the Jewish part of town, was primarily through what's now called the defunct Mandelbaum Gate. You could go from the Arab part of Jerusalem into the Jewish part, Western Jerusalem, but anyone with an Israeli passport, stamped with an Israeli visa, or any passport, I should say, stamped with a visa would never be allowed by the Jordanians in. The Mandelbaum Gate was the passageway between East and West Jerusalem, jointly supervised by Israeli army and by the Jordanian army. Barbed wire right down the middle of town. For those familiar, this is Rehovot HaMelech David. At the top, you can see the YMCA tower. That was easternmost Jerusalem the Jews could get to. It was barbed wire. It was concrete and concrete barriers. This is the end of Rehov HaNeviim, moving in towards the old city. Barbed wire, concrete barriers. This is Rehov Shalom Sion HaMalka, downtown Yerushalayim. Some may recognize the view just from the angle. Barbed wire, concrete barriers. That's as far as Jews got safely in Western Yerushalayim. Anybody here familiar with the Mamilla Mall? Anyone go shopping in the Mamilla Mall? Let me show you Rehov Mamilla and the Mamilla Mall between 1947 and 1967. It was walls. They built literally walls there. Mamilla was a slum where the poorest of the poor lived because the Jordanian army had access to pot shots against the Jews living there. Another view of barbed wire running down the heart through the streets of Yerushalayim. Just get a sense, gentlemen. You've been there, you've walked the streets. Think of what we have now. Look at these shots. A little mental compare and contrast as to what things were like for 20 years prior to the victory and the celebrations that we'll have this Wednesday. All right, get this thing going. Hit it. The Temple Mount is in our hands. Rabbi Shlomo Goren, later chief rabbi at that time, was chief rabbi of the Israeli army. Defense Minister Moshe Dayan with the patch, and Chief of Staff Yitzhak Rabin. Thank you.
I said, Dad, it's easy to be blasé. It's so easy for us to take for granted all that we have. Think of these pictures. Think of what it was like for the first 20 years of Israel's existence in the heart of Yerushalayim, and the sacrifices it took to create the ease, the pleasure, and unification of the city that all of us get to enjoy. Thank you so much.